We lunch at Swindon, and I see we shall be there in 20 minutes. It was nearly 4 o'clock when we at last, after passing through the beautiful Strood Valley, found ourselves at the pretty little country town of Ross. A lean and sly-looking man was waiting for us upon the platform. I had no difficulty in recognising Lestrade of Scotland Yard. With him, we drove to the Hereford Arms, where a room had already been engaged for us. "I have ordered a carriage," said Lestrade, as we sat over a cup of tea. "I knew your energetic nature, and that you would not be happy until you'd come to the place of the crime." "It was very nice and complimentary of you," Holmes answered, "but I'm not sure that we'll be needing the carriage this evening." Lestrade looked at Holmes and laughed indulgently. "You have to, no doubt, already formed your conclusions from the newspapers," he said. "The case is plain. Everything is clear. Still, of course, one can't refuse a lady, and such a very beautiful one, too. She's heard of you and wants to have your opinion, though I repeatedly told her that there was nothing which you could do in this case." "Why, bless my soul, here is her carriage at the door." Miss Turner was one of the most lovely young women that I have ever seen in my life. Her violet eyes were shining, her lips parted, pink flush upon her cheeks. All thought of her natural reserve lost in her excitement and concern. "Oh, Mr. Sherlock Holmes," she cried, "I am so glad you've come. I've driven down to tell you so. I know that James didn't do it. I know it. And I want you to start on your work knowing it too. You must prove his innocence. Such a charge is absurd to anyone who really knows him." "I hope we may clear him, Miss Turner," said Sherlock Holmes. "You may rely upon my doing all that I can." "But you have read the evidence. You have formed some conclusion. You do not yourself think that he is innocent?" she asked. "I think that it is very probable." "There now," she cried, throwing back her head and looking defiantly at Lestrade. "You hear? He gives me hopes." Lestrade shrugged his shoulders. "I'm afraid that my colleague has been a little quick in forming his conclusions," he said. "But he is right. Oh, I know that he is right. James never did it. And about his quarrel with his father, I'm sure they quarrelled because of me," she cried. "In what way?" asked Holmes. "It is no time for me to hide anything. James and his father had many disagreements about me. Mr. McCarthy wanted me and James to get married. James and I have always loved each other as brother and sister. But of course, he is young and has seen very little of life yet, and, well, he naturally did not wish to do anything like that yet. So there were quarrels. And this, I am sure, was one of them." "And your father?" asked Holmes. "He was against it. No one but Mr. McCarthy was in favour of it." A quick blush passed over her fresh young face when Holmes glanced at her. "Thank you for this information," said he. "May I see your father if I call tomorrow?" "I'm afraid the doctor won't allow it."
"The doctor?"
"Yes, have you not heard? Poor father had a problem with his nervous system. As doctor said, this accident has broken him down completely. Mr. McCarthy was the only man alive who had known Dad in the old days in Victoria."
"Ah, in Victoria.
That is important.
Thank you, Miss Turner. You have helped me very much."
"You will tell me if you have any news tomorrow?" she asked. "No doubt you will go to prison to see James. Oh, if you do so, Mr. Holmes, do tell him that I know him to be innocent."
"I will, Miss Turner."
"I must go home now, for Dad is very ill, and if he misses me so, if I leave him. Goodbye, and God help you." She hurried from the room as impulsively as she'd entered.
I am ashamed of you, Holmes, said Lestrade with dignity after a few minutes' silence. Why should you raise the hopes which you are bound to disappoint? I am not over tender of heart, but I think it's cruel.
I think that I know to prove James McCarthy, said Holmes.
Have you an order to see him in prison?
Yes, but it's only for you and me.
Then let us do so.
Watson, I fear you will find it very slow, but I shall only be away for a couple of hours.
It was late before Sherlock Holmes returned.
The glass still keeps very high, he remarked, as he sat down. And what did you learn from young McCarthy? Said I.
Nothing. None at all.
First, I thought that he knew who had killed his father, but now I am sure he knows nothing.
I cannot understand his taste, I remarked.
Why was he against the marriage with so charming a young lady as this Miss Turner?
Ah, it's a rather painful tale.
This fellow is madly in love with her, but 2 years ago, before he really knew her, for she had been away for 5 years at school, what does this idiot do but go and get into the clutches of a barmaid in Bristol and marry her in a registry office? It was with this barmaid wife that he had spent the last 3 days in Bristol, and his father did not know where he was.
Mark that point. It is very important. Good has come out of evil.
When the barmaid found out about his troubles, she had written to him to say that she had a husband already in the Bermuda dockyard, so there was really no tie between them, and that she was leaving the country. I think that the news made young McCarthy feel happier.
But if she is innocent, who has done it? Said I.
Ah, who?
I would call your attention to 2 points. One is that the murdered man had an appointment with somebody at the pool, and that someone could not have been his son, for his son was away, and he did not know when he would return. The second is that the murdered man was heard to cry, "Cooey," before he knew that his son had returned. Those are crucial points upon which the case depends.
At 9 o'clock the next morning, Lestrade called for us with the carriage, and we went to the Boscombe Pool.
There is serious news this morning, Lestrade observed. It is said that Mr. Turner of the Hall is so ill that his life is despaired of.
An elderly man, I suppose, said Holmes.
About 60.
This business has had a very bad effect on him. He was an old friend of McCarthy's, and by the way, he gave him his house rent-free.
Indeed. That is interesting, said Holmes.
Oh, yes. In 100 other ways he has helped him. Everybody around here speaks about his kindness to him.
Really?
Don't you think it's strange?
No, Holmes, said Lestrade. I repeat, there's nothing strange to me in this case. It's clear that McCarthy was killed by his son.
At this moment, we found ourselves near Mr. McCarthy's house.
It was strange to see no one in. The maid showed us the boots with which her master wore when he died. Holmes examined them, and the young man's boots too, and then we went down to the Boscombe Pool.
Lestrade showed us around the place where they had found the body. Holmes was running around like a dog for some time. Then he drew out a lens and knelt down talking to himself.
There are a young man's feet. He was walking 2 times. He ran quickly when he saw his father on the ground, and his tracks are clear. Here are the old man's feet. He was walking up and down. Look here. What is it? Unusual square boots. Where did they come from? He ran around and at last knelt down again near the huge tree and cried with joy. He examined the whole place with great care and took something up into an envelope. Minutes later, we were driving back. Holmes was carrying up the stone he had picked up in the wood. "This may interest you, Lestrade," he remarked, showing him the stone. "The murder was done with it." "I see no marks," Lestrade said. "There are none," he said. "Then how do you know?" Lestrade said. "The grass was growing under it. It had only lain there for a few days. There was no sign of a place whence it had been taken. It corresponds with the injuries. There is no sign of any other weapon." "And the murderer," Lestrade said, "is a tall man, left-handed, limps with the right leg, wears boots with thick soles and a grey cloak, smokes Indian cigars, uses a cigar holder, and carries a blunt penknife in his pocket." Lestrade laughed. "I'm afraid that I am still a sceptic," he said. "Theories are all very well, but we have to deal with a hard-headed British jury." "You work your own method, and I shall work mine," answered Holmes calmly. "I shall be busy this afternoon and probably return to London by the evening train." "But the mystery?" "It is solved."
"Who was the criminal then?"
"The gentleman I describe."
"But who is he?"
"Surely it would not be difficult to find him," said Sherlock Holmes. Lestrade shrugged his shoulders. "I'm a practical man," he said, "and I really cannot go about the country looking for gentlemen you've described. Everyone in Scotland Yard would laugh at me." "All right," said Holmes quietly. "I've given you the chance. Goodbye. I shall drop you a line before I leave.